Passages from Exodus chapter 24, which is on page 82 if you want to follow it in the Pew Bibles. Then God said to Moses, "Come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel. You are to worship at a distance, but Moses alone is to approach the Lord. The others must not come near, and the people may not come up with him." When Moses went and told the people all the Lord's words and laws, they responded with one voice, "Everything the Lord has said, we will do." Moses then wrote down everything the Lord had said. He got up early the next morning and built an altar at the foot of the mountain and set up 12 stone pillars representing the 12 tribes of Israel. Then he sent young Israelite men, and they offered burnt offerings and sacrificed young bulls as fellowship offerings to the Lord. Moses took half of the blood and put it in bowls, and the other half he sprinkled on the altar. Then he took the Book of the Covenant and read it to the people. They responded, "We will do everything the Lord has said. We will obey." Moses then took the blood, sprinkled it on the people, and said, "This is the blood of the covenant that the Lord has made with you in accordance with all these words." Moses and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and the 70 elders of Israel went up and saw the God of Israel. Under his feet was something like a pavement made of sapphire, clear as the sky itself. But God did not raise his hand against these leaders of the Israelites. They saw God, and they ate and drank.
So today is our Thanksgiving and commitment service, a time which we set aside each year, especially to think about God's faithfulness to us. Not that we don't do it any other time, but especially to do that and to think about our commitment to him. It's a time when we come together and we make promises. Promises to follow God and promises to support each other. Promises to start the new year together as we journey with God throughout our lives. And this year at Cottenham Baptist Church, you'll be pleased to hear that we don't just have one Thanksgiving and Commitment Sunday, as is normal. Instead, we've decided to prolong the experience and to have a whole month of commitment. I know, Rob, you see, you're in the excited category then. Commitment Month, we've called it, because we like our titles. A time when we can really stop and think about our commitment to God, our commitment to each other, and our commitment with what we own and what we earn. One whole month of committing. Now, on hearing this, no doubt some of you, like Rob, are very excited about this prospect, a time to verbalise your dedication. However, I am sure there are some of you here who have a completely different reaction, greeting talk of commitment with an inward sigh, or maybe even an outward groan, depending on how you're feeling. Which I guess isn't really a surprise, because, let's face it, committing can be a little bit of a two-edged sword. I remember just before James was born, I had lots of leaflets. You go and get a pack from the doctor, and I had lots of leaflets about things that you could sign up for that would help you prepare for having a child. And one of them is, well, it's a bounty pack that you get, and then you can sign up to get emails from Bounty and also to get lots of other packs where you get lots of freebies, little nappy, you know, things like that. And so I thought, oh, this is good, freebies. Anyone go for a freebie? So I signed up for my Bounty emails and my freebie packs. And at first it was really exciting. You know, I committed to this and they were sending me all these stuff and I was like, brilliant, free spray, excellent, you know. And then when James was born, I'd get these emails saying, your baby is 1 week old. And I'd like, well, that's very helpful because, you know, my brain isn't really working, so it's helpful to know how old he is. And, you know, maybe at this stage, your baby might be doing this and, you know. However, over time, I continued to get these emails Until eventually, an email comes through, your baby is so many weeks. At this stage, they'll be doing this. And I'm like, oh, your baby's... At this stage, they should be doing this. And I'm like, oh, no. And eventually, these emails, instead of being encouraging and exciting and helpful, became a reminder to me of all the things my child should be doing and all the things as a mother I should be doing. So instead of encouraging me, they just reminded me of what I was not doing. And you know, when we stop and think about it, making commitments, especially commitments to God at the beginning of a year, can be a bit like this. Because we can start off the year making promises and we feel good. We commit to something. We feel purposeful. We feel determined. We feel a sense of righteousness. Things are starting new. We may even feel excited about this new time, but let's not push it. We've pledged certain things to God, and we believe that he promises certain things to us in return. And it helps us. This sense of commitment helps us as we seek to walk with God and we seek to support each other. But then, inevitably, after a few days, weeks, or even months, if we're lucky, things start to change. We begin to enter into life, the drag of January, February, into March. And we start to fail in our attempts to stick to our commitment. You know, we slip up here and there. We're tired. We become increasingly busy. And we find it difficult to stick to the standards that we've set. And so instead of encouraging and helping, these commitments become a reminder, simply a reminder, a bounty email that comes through every week, reminding us of what we no longer do or how we no longer live. A constant reminder, if you like, of how we should do better. Until in the end, what started off brightly and helpful might become a burden to us. And we feel disheartened to the point where we wonder, why do we even bother? Why do we even bother as the people of God to continue to make promises which in reality we are never going to be able to keep? And you know, clearly it's not just us that thinks this. I mean, if we look through the pages of the Bible, the people of God over the years, there's a real sense of this progression, this commitment to God, excitement, determination, followed by failure, followed then by recommitment, excitement, followed by a slip-up here or there. I mean, take a look at our passage today, for example, that Rob read. Perhaps one of the most famous Old Testament passages on commitment. The people of God, depicted in front of Mount Sinai. A people who have recently gone through extraordinary things. They've been freed from slavery. They've escaped the Egyptians. They've crossed the parted Red Sea. They've relied solely on God in the wilderness, who has provided for them food and water every day since they came out of Egypt. And now they're faced with a moment of commitment, or a service of commitment, if you like. That's what this passage shows, a service of commitment. You see, the people of God have finally been approached by God after he showed his love to them, after he showed his faithfulness to them, after he showed his power to them, and he's come to them and he's presented them with his laws, with the Ten Commandments, just a few chapters before, his rules of how to live well. And after presenting these rules, these commandments, he's now asking his people to commit to him and his ways. Or if you like, after showing his power by bringing them out of Egypt, after showing his love by giving them rules to live by, after showing his faithfulness by providing for them each day, the God of the universe approaches his people and asks them to hand over their lives to him in return. If we were to bring it down to human standards, it might be a bit similar to the Heston-Blumenthal Little Chef combination. Don't know whether you're aware that Heston tried to revitalise Little Chef, coming to them and saying, you know, I can transform this lovely little eatery. and say, you know, I'm a big chef, I'm very famous, and I have specific ways of doing things. And if you take on these ways, if you do my recipes, if you change the setting to look like I want it to look, if you have a new menu, then I will work with you to make this better. But you need to commit to my ways of doing things. Fortunately, I hear Little Chef are closing quite a few of their branches at the moment. So I don't know whether Heston's ways have fully permeated the whole thing, but this was the commitment Little Chef had to make, to commit to Heston's ways. And in the same way, this is what God is asking of his people here at Mount Sinai. If you commit to me, you commit to my ways. Now, bearing in mind God has rescued his people from slavery, performed mighty miracles to do this, and provided for them every day since, this desire for the people of God to finally commit to him doesn't really seem unreasonable, I don't think. And so a service or ceremony of commitment takes place. And as we can see from the passage, it's quite a service. We're not going to do all of this today because there are altars, there are offerings, there are sacrifices, there are promises. The people of God declare, we will do everything the Lord has said. We will obey. And there's even sprinkling of blood on everyone to seal the whole deal. The people decide to give all they have to God. No holds barred, no holding back. And I bet you know, when they made this commitment, the people of God felt purposeful. I bet they felt determined. I bet they felt a sense of righteousness at what they were finally doing. They may have even felt excited about committing their lives to the God who had rescued them. The God of the universe wanted them to live for him, and they agreed. What could possibly be better than that for the people of God? And yet, as Moses descends Mount Sinai 7 chapters later, as he comes down the mountain with the tablets of stone, with the Ten Commandments engraved upon them, he returns to find the people of God worshipping. Not the God they gave their lives to just a few chapters before, but a golden calf. A golden calf they had made themselves. Which begs the question, if after all that drama, if after all that powerful work of God, if after all that covenanting a few chapters before, the people of God cannot even for a little while stay faithful to the promises that they make, why on earth do any of us even bother to try in the first place? I mean, really, what is the point of doing this year on, year out? Well, I guess if we see commitment as a measurement of success versus failure, I guess if we see commitment as only valid until we mess up, or if we see commitment to God as committing to someone who cannot accept failure, then there probably is no point. There's probably no point of doing it, because we're always going to mess up eventually. You know, we're always going to make mistakes. We're always going to go through difficult times. We're always going to have times when we can't quite get it right. We're never, ever going to be able to stick to the words of commitment we say on a Sunday. Not if we're trying to live life. But, you know, what is commitment to God really all about? Is it about making promises we cannot keep? Is it about standing up in a service and saying words which a few weeks down the line we'll struggle to implement in life? I mean, in the Bible, the people of God lived a roller coaster of a life with him. A life characterized really by failure and faithlessness. That's what we see time and again. This example we've just looked at of the golden calf being just one. And never once did God kick them to the curb. Never once did he say, okay, I'm going to pick a better bunch who can do a better job, because I'm fed up with this failure. Because you see, when God committed to his people and his people committed to him, it wasn't a commitment that was dependent on success or failure. It wasn't a commitment that lived or died on promises that could never be broken. Rather, it was a commitment that was dependent on a relationship. You see, in Exodus chapter 24, when blood is being sprinkled and promises are being made, when the people of God are agreeing, they're not agreeing to a book of law. They're not agreeing to follow a book of law. It says in the passage they're agreeing to the book of the covenant. The book of the covenant. When the people of God are entering into promises, they're entering into a covenant with their God, which is not a list of rules to be obeyed or promises to be kept, but it's a relationship, an agreement that is to grow and develop as time goes on. Or if you like, what the people of God are doing at Mount Sinai is not promising to keep their promises, but rather accepting an invitation. An invitation from God to enter into partnership with him, to become partners with the God of the universe, to work with him and live with him. And you know, as we sit here today, probably a little bit chilly at this point, as we head towards communion, which we're going to take, an opportunity to once more make commitments to God, we too are invited by God, not simply to make promises that a few days down the line we'll have forgotten about or broken. We're invited by God, not simply to go through the motions, because that's what we do as a church. We stand up, we say words. We're invited by God, not simply to commit our lives to God and then walk away unchanged. Do it again next year. We're not here to have to make promises, to keep our promises, but rather we're invited. We are here to accept an invitation from God himself to enter into a partnership with him. So that from this point on, not only are we committing to live God's way, but we're also committing to share God's life, to share in the life of God himself, to share his love, to share his joy, to share his peace, to share his power, to share his forgiveness, to share his grace, to share his suffering, to share his pain, to share his work, to share his mission to the world. We're invited to share the life of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and us. And as the people of Israel found out, that invitation is a world away from making a promise that we cannot keep. You know, Simon and I were watching a programme on telly the other day. We always watch lots of interesting programmes. Obese, A Year to Save Your Life. I don't know whether you saw that. It's a series. Basically, it's about people who are obese and they put a year aside to do something about it. And there's a trainer who comes across from America and sets with them goals and aims. And then they have to stick to them. You know, they have to beat their fears and the fact that they don't want to do it and all the habits they've got into and go along with what the trainer has set. Now, inevitably, the trainer knows that the person who's committed to this is going to slip up at some point, find it difficult and not be able to reach the standards that have been set. It always happens, doesn't it? There's lots of weeping and crying, and it's always going to happen because it's very difficult to change a lifestyle. But in this programme, the trainer doesn't come back over from America, because he keeps going back to America. Didn't think that was helpful myself, but anyway, doesn't come back over from America and say, see,
I told you. Knew you were going to slip up. You just can't do it, can you? I mean, how unhelpful would that be? Not really very. Instead, he comes back over and he looks at what this person is doing and he tries to encourage them to meet those goals, to get to those aims, to change it slightly so there's smaller steps to take. Whatever it takes, he works alongside this person to enable them to change and develop. In many ways, he's inviting them to enter into the life he's got in terms of fitness. He's not judging them for the life that they have at the moment. And that's what God does. He invites us into his life, the life that he has, the life that he is. The promises we make are not so he can judge us, but so he can come and walk alongside us and encourage us to reach into the life that he lives and that he offers to others. That's what we're here to do. That's what God is inviting us to do. And that's what we'll do in a few minutes' time. Let's pray together. Lord, we thank you so much for your love for us. That in all the things we see of you, Lord, you reach down towards us. You don't expect us to climb towards you, but you come down and you meet us where we're at, in the things we're struggling with, in the things we're walking through. And you invite us to lift our eyes to look to you, to look to your life that is open to us. We thank you that all the resources of heaven are open to us. We thank you that all the things that you have and the goodness that is in you is open to us. We thank you that in choosing to follow you, in choosing to commit to you, we are choosing to accept an invitation, one that you will never take away. We also thank you, though, Lord, that in accepting an invitation, we are also entering into your life of suffering as well and pain. We're walking your way, and I pray you'd give us the strength to do that. You'd provide us with what we need to do that, and you'd help the promises we make this day not to be ones we live or fail by, but to be a doorway into a new life with you.
This is my prayer in the desert, when all that's within me feels dry. This is my prayer in my hunger and need. My God is the God who provides. This is my prayer in the fire, in weakness or trial or pain. There is a faith proved of more worth than gold, so refine me, Lord, through the flame, and I will bring praise, I will bring praise. No weapon formed against me shall remain. I will rejoice, I will declare, God is my victory and he is here. This is my prayer in the battle, when triumph is still on its way. I am a conqueror, co-heir with Christ, so firm on his promise I'll stand. And I will bring praise, I will bring praise. No weapon formed against me shall remain. I will rejoice, I will declare, God is my victory and he is here. giving. I have a reason to worship. All of my life, in every season, you are still God. I have a reason to sing. I have a reason to worship. And I will bring praise, I will bring praise. No weapon formed against me shall remain. I will rejoice, I will declare, God is my victory and He is here. This is my prayer in the harvest, when favor and providence flow. I know I'm filled to be emptied again. The seed I've received, I will sow.